Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hello, FinTech leaders, and welcome to this episode today. I've got Arvid on the show. He's the co-founder and CEO of We Group, and super stoked to have him on the show today. He's got fantastic experience in sales. He's worked as a sales coach prior to this. And before we actually recorded the show, we were chatting a lot about communication, goal setting, and other parts of scaling up a business, which I think is critical to anyone that's starting out and in the midst of actually growing and expanding their business. So, mate, super excited and stoked to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thanks for having me, Richard. I'm very excited as well.
Cool. Let's jump into it. And I mentioned there at the top of the show that we're going to be chatting around communication, amongst other things. And let's kick off there. And what I'd like to know, maybe before we get into this, I think just to set the scene, I believe that communication, not just internally in your company, but also externally outwards to your audience and prospects and customers, is a critical factor in your success as an entrepreneur, but also a critical factor to lead your team, your employees, your partners, and also obviously your prospects and your audience to prosperity. So I'm very keen to sort of dig into this subject and get a bit of insights as to how you approach it. And what have you done to become a master communicator or someone that is able to lead a team into a direction and a path?
That's a very good question. And I would say that along the line, I kind of learned a lot in a way that if I look at myself, for example, 3 years ago or 4 years ago when I started the business, I think that most of the communication, both internally with the team as well as, for example, with clients, was most likely to be a one-man show, right? It was 90% or 80% monologue, me saying things and then going along as they responded on basically the things that I was already stating, right? I guess one of the major things that I learned along the line over the past 2-3 years into the We Group story is basically that communication should be mostly asking questions from my side, especially when I communicate with my team. They do most of the talking right now. And I think the biggest question that I usually ask is like, why, right? There is this rule of like 4 or 5 whys that I like to use if people tell me things, just to get a better insight in how they are thinking. Because if you're talking about communication in general, whether it is with a client, with a team member, with a partner, with even in your private life, I think one of the most important elements is empathy, right? It's the empathic level that you put into it. And obviously by asking why to your, to the other person on the other side of the table, you get a better understanding of why they are saying things they are saying, how they are feeling, how they are thinking. And that obviously leads to a better result. So if you would ask me like, what is the recipe to be a master communicator, if you will, not that I would call that myself, but thanks for doing that. Then obviously it would be trying to get as close to you as you can towards being majorly empathic and have that as like a major driver in that communication, in that conversation.
And I mean, you imparted some great nuggets there. And I'll pick up on one thing. You mentioned obviously asking the question why. And in the same breath, you said, I asked this because I want to get sort of the inside knowledge as to how this individual or maybe company, if that's the case, how they're thinking and what they're thinking of doing. And why is it important for a CEO and also a co-founder to ask that question why, and then also take time to get that understanding as to what this other person or individual is thinking?
Yeah. Well, I think typically a CEO trap or a co-founder trap would be that you think that your opinion is most likely to be the truth, right? Because you know the product best, it's your idea. you know the market best because you've researched it for months, if not years. You have prior experience, which sometimes a lot of team members may not have, for example. So obviously, that is a very easy trap to fall for. And by asking why, you could see another perspective. It's really about broadening your horizon or opening your mind to another opinion, even of people that might be less experienced or have less knowledge in a particular area, because that is sometimes even a good thing, right? Especially, for example, We Group is active in the space of insurance, right? And insurance is very complex, yet the trap is that you might be very much stuck in that conservative way of thinking that is the conservative insurance industry. So sometimes it's even better to get opinions, to get ideas from people who don't know all the ins and outs in that industry, because it might lead you to something else, something bigger. And that is, I think, the major reason why I ask so much, like, but why is that? And on the other hand, maybe to elaborate a little bit more, it's also the case that sometimes you might think, okay, I am right. Obviously, the other party on the other side of the table also think that they are right, right? And if you ask them three times, four times why, they might also come to the conclusion that their opinion is something that needs to be changed or that they were not right to start with. Yet, if you as a CEO would say from the very beginning, no, you're wrong, and this is the way we are doing it, I don't believe that. That's management from the 80s, right? It's not how we do things today anymore. So, yeah.
So by asking this, you're getting their opinion, you're also broadening your horizons, as you mentioned, but it sounds like you're starting to build a relationship, and you're building a relationship on a mutual understanding of potentially how to solve a problem or how to tackle a new product launch or something like that, which then is going to help you as a team, whether it's your internal team or whether it's a partner or customer, you as a team become successful, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is true. That is very much so. And it's not only the case for teams or for internal communication, but also let's take the example of having a conversation with a client. Say that you gave your pitch, you had your sales conversation, you gave him some advice, and the result is that the potential client or prospect says, sorry, but I am not interested. I would say intuition, or we are like programmed as humans to start defending our product, right? And to say, no, but I think you are a good right client for this and it might help you. But that is not the right way. So what we typically do now is, again, implement that why rule and say, okay, I totally understand, but like, why is it that you were not interested? Or what would you like to hear from me to actually be more interested? And as we go in that kind of conversation, when it moves in that direction, we even had several situations where the potential client said, well, now I think about it a little bit more, actually, it might be interesting, or I do see an opportunity over here. And that's actually the new way of sales. They call it consultative selling rather than the 80s or 19 selling that we see. So that is basically where I got the idea. I'm not going to say that the five whys is something that I invented, obviously, but that is where I really had like the idea of, okay, if it works externally, if it works with clients, it should work internally as well with my team too. And we've seen major results on using that type of communication.
I mean, okay, so you say major results. So let's dig into that a bit more. I mean, could you give me and the audience a couple of examples of some of the results that you've achieved by using this open, empathetic way of communicating?
Yeah. Well, I think the best way to elaborate is by looking off to my prior experience, which was at a corporate company within the Munich Re Group. It's a very big insurance reinsurance group. And there we see, obviously, the corporate structure as you might think so. Anyone that's higher on the food chain, if you will give you an order, basically, and that is how things are going to be done. Obviously, by now, I am not sure that this is still the case, and probably they've evolved as well, but it's typically the like corporate hierarchy way of doing business. Whereas today, by implementing that into our team, and with that, I mean the culture where a lot of questions is asked, where there's a very open feedback culture as well, which is very important. We've seen that our product, for example, evolved to levels that would have never come up with me. If it was just me dictating how the product would have looked like, it would have been a totally different product. And it would also most likely be wrong, because we've seen competitors doing more or less a lot of what my initial idea was, and they're not around anymore. So that's basically, for me, to prove that it's very good that I didn't enforce my own will or my own ideas for 100%. So product level is definitely something that changed due to that open communication culture. Same goes, for example, our retention in terms of team members. Obviously, in tech startups, there is a lot of competition in the labor market, right? In terms of hiring, but also in terms of keeping your team members. In Belgium, especially, we've seen a lot of tech startups where there are people who worked at 4 or 5 different tech startups already, right? So we're always thinking, okay, I hope that if we now hire this guy, in 2 years, he won't decide to go to another one again. So the retention in the team is very important. And we see that because of our culture, it is very high. We almost never lost people who left us. So that's obviously a good thing. So I think all these things together prove that this is, at least for us, the right way.
Yeah, I love those examples. I mean, those are all critical factors to building a strong culture, but also being able to scale your business. And just to jump outside the box, and I know we've been talking mostly internally and also some externally, we mentioned clients, but let's look outside and go, okay, well, all our external communication or our external outflow, stuff that's going out. So whether that be videos on LinkedIn or YouTube or text posts on social or blogs, etc. Walk me, this obviously is another mechanism to communicate to your audience, prospects and customers. And how are you leveraging this communication to continuously show your customers that you're there to help them, you're there to take them from maybe where they are right now to a place where they want to be?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a very good question. And it's something that we at WeGroup have put a lot of effort in. I think the core element over there is thought leadership, right? We always think in terms of bringing value to our potential customers and to the market in general. We create a lot of content, both videos as well as written content, as well as podcasts, for example, that we bring to our markets that actually never talk about our product or about WeGroup as a company, but just tackle the insurance industry in general. So, for example, we have this one YouTube show, which is called Hello Insurance, where we invite thought leaders, insurance, captains of industry, things like that. And we basically talk about the things that concern our clients, which are typically insurance brokers or agents or other distributors. And that is something that brings a lot of value, but it also takes them to the first step of that marketing funnel, right? So down the line, obviously, they get interested. And that is where I see it works for us as a company, because obviously, in the end, we are still a company. We want to sell our products. We want to make a profit just as any other company. But the way how that is done is different from, let's say, 10 years ago. So that value element over there is, I think, the most important thing. But on the other hand, that being said, it's most important also, I think, to be patient about that. We started this kind of strategy about half a year ago, a little more than that. And now we see the first results. So we needed to invest major time and, of course, some money as well to create all this content, to send it out in the world. And now we see the results from that. And there are two big results. First of all, the short term, which is obviously our sales is exploding thanks to that. And that's a good thing. But secondly, we get that thought leadership status. People really see us as, okay, these guys, they know what they're talking about. They know the industry. They have the network, because obviously these guys are in our show. So we have convinced them to be present in that show, right? Mm. So they are the good party to work with. Ergo, if you have a question, we could reach out to them, not even to become a client, but just to discuss matters of insurance in general. And that, I think, is the golden recipe of the 21st century, if you will. Maybe that sounds very big, but for successful marketing, successful external communication.
So here we go. I want to bust some myths, because I have spoken to leaders over the past few weeks, even past few months, leaders in insurance, tech in general, and also obviously in the fintech space. And some are, this whole thought leadership, I guess, topic comes up. And I've discussed with them, you need to, in order to be a thought leader, you need to get your ideas out there. And they say, oh, Rich, I can't get my ideas out there because I'm running. I need to do this, 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 this. Okay, well, guys, stop for a second and think about what your audience wants to be discussing and take that to them, which exactly what you guys are doing here. And then all the ideas, your little idea bank, you can basically mix and match as to what and when you're going to send that information out. And then I think this is important for everyone to understand. You don't have to be a 30 or 40, 50, 60, 70 man company. You can start smaller, but you've got to start. Because as you're saying, there is a bit of a lead up, right? It's maybe 6 months, maybe a bit longer, 6 to 9 months. And then you start seeing the results because you are going to be top of mind all the time, right?
Exactly. And I think you're pointing out a major issue or a major challenge today over here as to a lot of people say, I don't have time for that because I have a million other things on my plate and I simply don't have time to create that content, bring it out. And that is because we are programmed, especially as executives in companies, whether you're an executive at, let's say, the biggest banks or insurance companies or the smallest startup, you want to see direct results, right? We exactly. want to turn a valve and immediately we want to see a result out of that. But that is not the case anymore today, right? That is not how we should be thinking. We should be thinking of, okay, how are we bringing that value out? How are we distributing this value? Because that's also another myth over there. A thought leader, in my opinion, is not a person. It could be a group of people, right? It is a movement. And for example, in We Group, our salespeople, they also have interviews. We have expert talks as well out there where they are the star of the show. So it does not need to be the CEO all the time or one of the other C-levels. So that obviously limits my input in time, which solves the first problem you were raising over here. Yeah. But secondly, it also raises to your credibility because say that you as a CEO are aiming at being a personal thought leader, then everyone out there in the end will want to talk to you. That means at events, but it also means in client conversations. In the end, they will say, oh, but can I still have, I want to discuss this with your CEO. Can I have, in our case, can I have a discussion with Arvid? Well, if every potential client would have that, they would not become clients ever. They would be way too much. And now, because we have our other people in our organization who also got this thought leader status, well, they can carry the weight together with me. And that is because I am not a thought leader, but We Group is the thought leader. We as a company know what we talk about. So I think that is both the element that you need to implement in there, but it's mutually also the solution to the problem that you're raising.
I think, yeah, you hit the nail on the head then. You got to understand in this day and age, inflow, i.e. income, is going to equal your outflow. It's going to be determined by your outflow, right? So every dollar that's coming in, every new client that's coming in is going to be really determined by your marketing activity, your PR, the podcast, the webinars, all the stuff that's happening. And at a point in time, it will all kick off. And to your point, it doesn't just happen overnight. There's a bit of a process and investment that has to happen. So listen, I love this conversation. And I also want to know how you have flipped the scales and really looked at the stats to determine your week on week as you started, how this engine has evolved and also how you tweak this engine over a course of time to make certain that obviously after 6 to 9 months, there is return on investment.
Exactly. Yeah, that is a very good one. Because to be very honest, in the beginning, I was very bad at this. I was very output driven in a way that I just wanted to do things. And we were just saying, okay, we're throwing out another thing and we'll see how it reacts or how the market reacts, right? This could be in the marketing area, but as well as when we're talking sales, when we're talking internal efficiency, I was just very bad at that. And I remember at a certain point, I had a conversation with an old friend who used to work at Google, and he was talking about KPIs and OKRs and all these. He had a long list of basically abbreviations that I never heard about that were ways to track how you were doing. And I really got into that. Obviously, as you go, as a startup company, we raised money as well. We're working with venture capital funds, and obviously they expect that of you. So you are kind of forced to go into that. But at a certain point, I was really like, okay, we really, really need to implement a system to track this, but not only to track this, but also to communicate it to the entire team. Because I see a lot of startup founders, CEOs, as well as executives in like established companies and incumbents, they have their sheets and they have their tools, but it's just their tools. And they use it to report it either to their boards or to their management or whatever. but not down the line, right? And that is really, I think, a big mistake that is made in a lot of companies today. So what we have implemented is a system with OKRs, objectives and key results. For the people who might not familiar with it, there are millions of books probably written about that subject. It's very interesting. And we use actually a platform for that. We use Purdue, but there are a lot of platforms that are going into this that both set the targets, set the KPIs, set the OKRs for everybody, but also allows everybody to track them. And it's a digital platform, but we also printed out extracts from that. They're hanging in our office and everybody is at all time aware of how you're doing. And I think that is the key to achieving your goals, right? So yeah, it's been a major change for us. And even up to a point where I get people from our tech team, for example, who said, well, I've seen the sales result this month. And wouldn't you like try to do it in a different way next month when we are not hitting targets? And that is very important. I mean, it's obviously a huge hit to my ego, but it's something that you need to take and that makes you rethink your whole organization or a part of your organization. So it has been great for us.
How does that... Because I know... Listen, I think what you're saying is spot on, but also know that daily and weekly, it's sometimes tough to always look at these objectives and goals and make certain we're sort of hitting them and moving forward. So, you know, what I like to do and my clients like to do, I teach my clients to do is we have what we call a battle plan, a weekly battle plan. We block stuff out in our diaries and then we really focus on that and we don't deviate from it. Right. Mm-hmm. So I'd like to know from you, what do you do in order to hit those key objectives on a daily and weekly basis?
Yeah, well, that's a very good one as well. We are actually, first of all, like I said earlier, by visualizing them both for yourself and your team, that is definitely a way to make sure that everybody is on top of the targets at all time. Right. Yeah. And there are targets. I mean, when you say, how are you tracking it on a daily or weekly basis?
But not tracking. It's a bit, I think, tracking, I feel like you're trying to pressurize someone to do something. It's more yourself. It's you as a CEO and founder. Like, there's different ways to do it, right? I do battle plans. We block out stuff on a daily basis to focus on maybe some strategy stuff, maybe some podcast prep, etc. So just quite keen to open up the insides of your head just to see how that looks.
Well, typically, I like what you were saying with the battle plan. It's not something that we do on a weekly basis, but it's definitely something that I'm willing to look into. But basically, what it is I've learned over the years as well that by being almost too focused on your KPIs or on your metrics is not always a good thing, right? We have these KPIs. For example, sales KPIs are very easy because it's very easy to see, okay, we need to have that much new monthly recurring revenue generated, for example. That is very easy. But other things can't be changed that fast. What I mean is, for example, let's take usage in customers. Say that our usage numbers is going from daily usage to weekly usage. That would be a very bad thing for us as a SaaS company, obviously. That is not something that you can change overnight. So I try to like see in my KPIs what is frequently going bad. For example, 1 week of bad usage is not a sign that we are seeing a decreasing amount of usage or in the long run, right? If I see it 2 or 3 weeks in a row, then obviously it is something that needs to be adjusted. And when I see that, when there are some, let's say, red flags that needs to be addressed, I first of all try to address it with the direct team members. The direct team members that are responsible for that. I have my one-on-ones, obviously with the management, but also with some other key people in our organization. I try to bring it up with them and basically try to have them come up with solutions, with a plan. How are we going to move the team towards this goal and be back on track again? So I mainly let it come from inside the organization because I've also seen that if you let it come from yourself and try to enforce a way of working, typically, people don't take that as easily, you know, because then again, it becomes an almost, I always joke and say WeGroup is not a democracy, but the dictatorship or the dictator is not the CEO in our case. It is the people who come up with the solutions. And in a lot of cases, that is not me.
Yeah. Listen, all salient points and important points as you go through that phase. And Yeah, as you guys maybe look to the future and have that vision as to what's the next step of growth or the next block that you're trying to climb up, what factors are you considering and what questions are you asking yourself to make certain that you achieve your vision?
Well, the question that I like to ask most, and that is boring almost everybody in the company by now, probably, is the question, what do we know or what do we have that nobody else in the world does or has? That is basically what I always try to bring up to rethink what we are doing today. And for example, for We Group, the question is, I like to believe that we know better than anybody else how to sell insurance products. We have the technology and the knowledge that we bring to our clients so they can sell insurance products in a way that it has never done before, because we simply know how that works. And that is a question I think that every company should ask them, like, what do we know that nobody else knows, on a very frequent basis, because the answer changes along the line. And to get back to the first part of your question, the next step for us is definitely globalization, internationalization. We've been active in several countries in Europe. In the next few years, we'll be expanding more in the European market. But in the end, the play is obviously a global play, right? We are looking at major markets, whether it are developing markets such as Asian or African markets, as well as very developed markets with huge opportunities such as the US, for example, or the UK even for that matter, because apparently I can't call them Europe anymore right now.
Yeah. Not good. We can't get into that discussion. We already spoke about my shop issue before we started, right?
Exactly. Now, let's say geographically, UK is still a European continent, obviously. Let's keep it on
that. I feel European.
You feel European. I'm very happy. You guys are still welcome. So, yeah. But apart from that, that is obviously the next player, the next step for We Group. And if we go with that question, what do we know best? The answer is not the same for every market, because it may very well be that in some markets, the solution that you bring is already there, or the problem that you are solving is non-existent. People are simply not having that problem, because to give a very short example, I had a conversation lately with an InsurTech founder from Africa, from South Africa, actually, and I was raising some problems in terms of how insurance intermediaries such as brokers and agents use software and are not efficient and things like that. And he basically said, well, that would never work in our market. And I was like, well, why is that? And he said, well, we simply don't distribute via brokers and agents. We have other means of distribution. So obviously, these guys are non-existent in our market. And that is, I think, not the first time, but it struck to me there, like, okay, we are solving a problem that might not be there on a global level. So it's very important to keep asking you those questions, like, are we still on point with the challenges that we solve? Is our solution on point? So yeah, I think that is the answer to your question.
Cool. And you know, I always like to wrap up the show at the end and really ask you the question around, how do you continuously self-educate? Are you listening to podcasts? Are you watching YouTube channels? Are you reading books? And if so, which medium would you, which sort of podcasts or books would you recommend to the listeners to pick up and listen to or read as they go on their scaling journey?
That is a very good question. And the short answer is I do them all. So it really depends what I am doing and what state of mind I am in. For example, recently, well, a couple of months ago, I really gave sports and working out a place in our organization. And obviously, I need to give the example. When you are hitting the gym or running or whatever, and a podcast or even a YouTube show is very nice to listen. Obviously, I'm not reading books when I'm running, but reading books is still something that is very important to me as well. And I will always remember back when we started, I had this mentor and he said to me, well, every question that you can ever ask me, the answer is already written down somewhere. So somebody had this problem before, and the answer is, the solution is there. You just haven't used the means yet to find that solution. And to be honest, I'm a very bad reader. I hate reading, and I had to force myself to read. I was the kind of kid in high school who if he had to do book reports, he chose the books that had a movie as well. So I did Lord of the Rings like four times over 4 years. So that was the kind of reader I am, obviously. But I forced myself to do it. And if you're not a big reader, it could be as much as like read 20 pages per day. That makes a book in 2 weeks as well. So that's really a kind of pace that I try to keep to one or two books per month, at least in combination with podcasts and YouTube shows. And I do think that 90% of the things that I know today that I haven't learned by experiencing it in the company, it comes from these sources. So yeah, I would recommend it to everybody.
Any book or any podcast that you want to give a shout out to that you think, or YouTube channel that you want to sort of let people maybe take a listen to that you've got benefit from?
I think the book that resonated for me most was one that I read in the very beginning of WeGroup, and it's called 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel. It's a very famous business book. I guess that most startup founders will have already read it, but it's a great one. And basically, well, it was life-changing in a way for me. And in terms of podcast shows, except obviously the leaders in fintech, I think for me, it really matters as to what I am doing. For example, WeGroup is now raising a new fundraising round, and I am listening to a podcast show, which is called the European VC Show. Basically, it is focused at venture capital funds. So it's basically by VCs for VCs, but it gave me great insights into how do these fund managers, the investment managers, how do they think? What are their challenges? And it worked well. But tomorrow, if let's say sales might be an issue at WeGroup, then I will probably go to a sales podcast. If marketing is a thing, I will go to a marketing one. So it really depends on my mindset at that moment, I would say.
Yeah, cool. It makes complete sense. And as we wrap up the show, how can folk get in touch with you and the team at WeWork? WeGroup.
WeWork. Before answering the question, there is a very funny story around that, because at one time I was participating in a startup pitching competition, and all of a sudden I got a mail from the organization, and they said, well, thanks for registering, but we think that you would be better suited to be speaking on main stage. So I was like, well, yeah, sure, that's cool. And obviously it didn't strike to me, but at the moment that I arrived at the show, they realized I was not the WeWork CEO, but I was from WeGroup. And yeah, it was very funny. Eventually I spoke at main stage, and it was a great show, and a lot of people liked it, but awesome. Yeah, a lot of people were expecting Newman from WeWork at that point. So sorry awesome. For everybody hearing this that was disappointed at that particular event. But no, to get in touch with me, obviously, you could email us at just arvid@wegroup.be. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Twitter. I'm on Instagram even. So whatever you'd like to reach out to me, Arvid or Arvid de Koster, just reach out with any questions you might have. And I'd be very, very happy to answer them.
Awesome, mate. And amazing. I love the last story. It's a really cool story. And amazing show today. We dived into some really cool stuff here. So, you know, for everyone out there, there's really actionable points that you can take away and implement and really use to drive your team and also your ecosystem forward here. So use this. If you want to reach out to myself or Arvid and ask any questions off the back of that, we're happy to jump on a call. Okay, mate, thanks again, and look forward to going live soon.
Great stuff. Thanks for having me.